Welcome to the Brew Drink Run podcast, brought to you by the only website that promotes brewing your own beer, consuming the best craft beers in the world, and then running off the calories, brewdrinkrun.com.
I'm too sexy for my shirt. Welcome to episode number 162 of the Brew, Drink, Run podcast. My name is Lee.
This is Keith.
I'm Raymond.
If this is your first time joining us or your first time in a while, thanks for being here. You can say hi to the ushers on your way out and be sure to write your name in the pew registry so we can follow up with you later on. If you like the show, don't forget to rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, wherever you grab your podcasts and write a short review. Those ratings and reviews help more people to find the show, or you can tell a friend. Post about the show on Facebook or Twitter. If you do that, be sure to tag us at Brew Drink Run. This is our big show where we talk a little bit about running, a little bit about home brewing, and of course, talk a lot about beer. And we're going to start the show off with one just like we always do. Keith, what have you got in your hand over there?
I have a bottle of beer from Funky Buddha Brewery. This is the 2017 vintage of the Maple Bacon Coffee Porter. 6.4% alcohol by volume porter with coffee, maple syrup, and natural flavors added. So they're leaving it a little bit mysterious whether there's actual bacon in this or not. I don't know. Maybe, or maybe it's just some smoke or smoked malt or smoke liquid smoke or something. Doesn't matter. What we have here is actually a fairly well sought after beer. I mean, this is one that I remember first having this at one of the Hunapu days that I think it was the one that we all went to. Yeah, and it was something I hadn't been able to try, and I was really excited to try it. I remember thinking it was actually really quite good when we had it down there, but it was, you know, 2 or 3 ounces, so it wasn't like this is what I think it'll be my first time like really diving into, you know, good. Well, we got about an 8 ounce pour of this, so that's it's going to be exciting. I'm looking forward to it.
Funky Buddha, no stranger to the podcast, and one thing that we are always quick to mention about Funky Buddha is kind of the fact that they're known for these beers that replicate food dishes that are very culinary, like their blueberry cobbler beer and their peanut butter and jelly beer
and strawberry shortcake, et cetera.
So they really, in previous episodes, you've heard us talk about them being kind of magicians of this, being able to replicate the smallest detail of these traditional food items in a beer. And it's kind of crazy to think that we're starting the podcast off with one of these, you know, because they are, like you said, it's a beer that is typically or has been very sought after for a long time, but they've actually started getting this beer out to production. They've ramped up their level so you can actually go and find it if you're in their distribution area, which is great.
Yeah, it looks like it's an annual thing since they did put the vintage on there. Raymond picked this up, I'm guessing, in Jacksonville at your local bottle shop that you visit.
Yeah, at the Total Wine there, and later on, traveled down to Orlando a few weeks later and saw it on the shelves in the Publix down there.
Okay. So there you go. So it's as they've grown, they're able to produce more and able to get these beers that people really want to try out there. And I think that's fantastic.
I think it's great.
Yeah.
Because driving up the demand for the same beer year in and year out. Right. I mean, it kind of,
it's one thing if you got that one special beer and you want to keep it as mostly a that kind of thing. Even some of the beers that, you know, like you're talking about your KBSs and that kind of thing, they do at least go out to distribution. I got no problems with, you know, like Three Floyds having their Dark Lord and it's all just available that day and that's really it, and maybe doesn't go out onto the shelf. Actually, I'm not sure. Maybe that does hit distribution. I don't think it does, but I'm okay with that. You know, I think that's a fine thing to do, but honestly, at some point, if you start doing that too much or too often with too many things, I think people will start to turn on you at some point. Because really, we just want to be able to drink the beer and try the beer.
Speaking of drinking the beer, Raymond's got a mouthful of it. We're gonna backtrack a little bit.
Sip.
And tell us what this I don't know. We'll start with the label. We'll start with the label art on this one. Funky Buddha on their regular releases now on their 12-inch bottles are starting to work that Buddha silhouette. that they use in their caps more and more into the label art. I know the Pineapple Beach this year has it, I've seen several other bottles on the shelves lately that have that worked in. But this bottle, this label is very different from that. It's much more graphic. Why don't you give it a description there?
Well, I'm used to they're always kind of funny too. They have kind of that comic book quality to them. This one's very clean. Got kind of a mandala floral kind of pattern going to it, and a good reflective kind of metal embossing on it.
That's what stood out to
me. It's really kind of classic and simple and straightforward.
It looks much more like a special bottle. Yeah, this is a bottle you would save or you would gift. It has that kind of high-end black label with the silver metallic and the red accent. Is that right? It's got a red accent on it. I'm looking at the back of it.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, I would have no problem, you know, taking this in lieu of a bottle of wine over to somebody's house or something like that as a gift beer or as a presentation.
The presentation is nice, yeah.
Absolutely. And a porter in a glass, not quite a stout in a glass, right, Raymond? There's a lot of difference
thinner.
I want to hear all the subtle differences.
You know what? I this one's got a lot more carbonation to it. That's really kind of the big difference. You see it in the edge of the glass there. But, you know, porters typically thinner than your average stout.
That is pretty dark and it's pretty dense. Yeah, it's dark. You do get that little ring of cola-ish right underneath what's left of the head.
So you get it on the top too. If you look straight down and kind of pull the glass away, you get that kind of cola light, you know, coming through.
But man, oh man, the aroma on this.
Crazy. We were sitting here, you know, like getting ready to record and checking levels and all those things we have to do. We had to get the beer poured. And, you know, I'm like sitting here. I can smell the maple like from the table. I'm not even bringing it to my nose. It's like I'm standing here and the beer is on the table and I'm sitting in front of a microphone and I can smell that from all the way up here. And then you bring it up and that maple is joined by the coffee big time, which is a great combination. Not the first brewery to do this, but it's an excellent combination. And there is just a touch of that little kind of smokiness in this as well. It's not overbearing. It's not huge. It's not over the top. It's very subtle and it's there as well. Maybe a little bit of, you know, caramel and chocolate and some of those kinds of things you might expect in a fairly large dark beer.
I mean, it is log cabin winter breakfast. Mm-hmm. I mean, that kind of that syrupy aroma and I that warm syrup. I mean, it's something that I don't normally think about syrup having a smell. I mean, you really do have that kind of flavor.
Well, there's almost
burst,
a little.
It's all connected, right? It's all olfactory. So
I mean, something that you don't normally want in a beer, but in this case, it really works. It's almost just like a little buttery thing. So you think about your pancakes with the butter and the syrup on there. You know, when you say butter and you know, and beer, you think diacetyl, which is an off flavor, but that's not really what's here. It's more of just that, like we talk about how they're kind of magicians with aroma. I mean, it smells like, you know, syrupy pancakes and, you know, and bacon on a plate in front of you in the morning.
Really intense sense memory kind of thing. Yeah. You know, how much of it is really there and how much of it is inference, because the little bit that you do get, do you just fill in all the rest of the blanks? It doesn't matter. Because it's like an amazing trick.
Yeah.
And you guys have both had sips. I'm going to do that now and let you tell me what I'm going to be tasting.
It's good. I think that sometimes they nail the taste right along with the aroma. I think the aroma is a little bit more spot on than the taste here. But flavor wise, this is, again, nice kind of sweet, kind of cocoa-y chocolate going on. You definitely get the maple syrup big time. Coffee isn't as big as maybe I was expecting. A little more subtle. Kind of blends more with the real roastiness, I think, of the malt, but it's definitely still there too. I can't imagine that this bottle is particularly old. You know, being a 2017 vintage, there's a stamp on here and it's kind of hard to read it's in the light in general, but I mean, a 2017 vintage beer, I mean, we're only in April here, so obviously it's not going to be old or faded.
I bought this like three maybe 4 weeks,
right? So I like the taste. I think what I really like the most is like the aftertaste. Like, after everything's done, it's got this lingering kind of pancakey, syrupy flavor to it, which I really like.
there's a little bit of a savoriness to the aftertaste too. Just a little bit of not salt, but there's something that isn't sweet there that goes along with it. That is a little bit tackier. That kind of complements. The aroma is this huge big thing, and it would be like an amazing feat if the taste backed up every bit of that aroma, and it doesn't. But that doesn't mean that it's not successful. I think for me, if it was going to try to bridge that aroma flavor gap, it may have to change the style, the amount of carbonation that's in it. I mean, there's carbonation. It's not like it's not champagne bubbly, but there's a decent amount of carbonation in this, and the thinner mouthfeel and a relatively low ABV, you know, we're kind of putting these things together. But if it was, you know, sweeter and boozier and oilier,
denser and thicker,
and didn't have the brightness and the carbonation, I think that some of these more subtle flavors that we're smelling, the aromas, may also be in the flavor as well. But the brightness is maybe masking it a little bit, because I know that the amount of carbonation can really do a lot to heighten lighter beers, and can do a lot to kind of take away some of the rough edges of not so great beers, or beers that may have some other problems. You know, sometimes a little bit of carbonation goes a long way.
Yeah.
And with this, I wonder if that extra bit of bubble is taking away some of the sweetness, or, you know, again, another aspect of it that I really feel like maybe even some of the smokiness.
Yeah, I feel like it's definitely sweet enough. I mean, I think this is definitely a sweet beer. And in my head, I remember being just thoroughly more impressed with it when it was something that I was seeking out. I remember being, oh my God, I can't believe I've finally get a chance to try this. I've heard such good things. Yes, this is really good. Which is not to say that this is not an excellent beer. It really is. I'm thrilled to be trying it again, but not having that anticipation of really wanting or getting it checked off the list, or I've really been wanting to try this. It's really just a solid sweet porter with a nice maple sweetness and a touch of smoke and a little bit of coffee. I mean, you know, it's a at least taste wise, you know, I think aroma, I'm a little bit more impressed than the taste, but super solid beer, and it's really good. It's just kind of funny when you think about, you know, when you're anticipating something for the first time. I think it goes for anything. I think the first time you have any beer that's hard to find and you finally get a hold of it, you're way more excited about it. And then if you get to try it again, you know, later on down the road when it's just sort of, oh, we're going to have that, cool. You know, it kind of changes your perspective and how your experience.
Well, I think when we had those 2-ounce pours that first time too, I mean, none of us had really had that much or anything really for me in the way of Funky Buddha at that point. And there weren't as many of these kind of culinary beers available. I mean, and so it was, I definitely did not have an experience base or the same experience base that I do now. So even if this beer is identical to that beer that we had 3-4 years, I don't want to say how long ago it was.
Yeah,
I
mean, several years ago.
That it's not every bit as good as that. And so if this is something that, and I would totally pick this up, and I'm very much enjoying it right now.
Everything that I just said, that's just kind of personal experience. If I were to go down to Florida tomorrow and this was still sitting on a shelf somewhere, I would probably grab a bottle and bring it home and share it with somebody else, because it's definitely a good sharing beer. Probably a little hard to get through 22 ounces of this on your own. Yeah, I think it would get a little cloying at some point on the sweetness as it kicks up, especially as it warms. But like you were saying, as a gift, as a bring to a party, as a what in the world did you just, you know, because just the name of it and all of that, the whole experience of sharing this beer is kind of maybe where it's at. So yes, I mean, this is a go find a bottle if you can and try it. It's very good.
And we're a big Brenner family. Like, we actually make breakfast for dinner fairly often, once or twice a month. because it's super easy. You kind of feel like you're getting away with something. And I do love to drink a nice coffee stout with those meals.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And depending on exactly what I was having, I don't know that I'd actually want to pair this with waffles and syrup and bacon.
Probably too much.
It would probably be a little much. But you know, depending on what that actual makeup of the meal is, I mean, this would...
This
would
might
definitely
go better
round
with like
it off.
This might go better with a savory seasoned, you know, like your potatoes and eggs and something like that. You know what I mean? And your breakfast meat. I think that saltiness would cut some of the sweetness of the beer itself.
Yeah, I think you're right. Well, we're not drinking amazing beers like this one from Funky Buddha. We are trying to make our own, and the homebrew front, you guys got a report on that from me a couple of episodes ago. The Imperial Pale Ale, I guess I'll call it that, even though it's not pale, and I guess it's technically Imperial, is actually, I feel like drinking a little better. I feel like another couple of weeks in the bottles, it's just gonna... Number one, I know what to expect at this point. Mm-hmm. It's not like it's a surprise when I open it up. But I do feel like some of the things that I considered to be rougher edges on it have mellowed out a little bit more. And it's maybe not as... Not that's not the chewiness, that thing we kind of described as being that homebrew malt taste. Mm-hmm. Maybe isn't as bad as it was right away as soon as it had carved up. Or at least I'm able to look past it at this point and just enjoy it for what it is. But it was actually really nice. A couple of nights ago, I had some of the Service Brewing Old Guard. Mm-hmm. Started my night with that. Super happy to have that out in cans right now and be able to pick that up. And had one of those and then followed it with mine. And it was nice. They're not the same style at all. Mm-hmm. But I was like, ooh, the color is the same. Which, again...
Well, that's how not pale that pale is?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right.
Yeah. Well, it's those homebrew malts, buddy. Yeah, I mean, sure. It's... Yeah, and you're using malt extracts. I mean, let me clarify. I mean, if you're using all grain...
Look brown.
Yeah. If you're using all grain, obviously you have a lot more leeway. But this is, you know, liquid and dry malts. Right. And so it's that color. And I was like, okay, I can kind of get behind this. Right. And it was nice to not just drink it in a vacuum, because normally when I'm having one of my home brews, it's just dinner beer, right? Yeah. That's the whole idea. It's house beer to have available and just drink when you want to drink. But it was really nice to have it in conjunction with another beer and be able to think about it critically with the one that I just had and be able to do that. So I need to remember to do that more often.
Yeah, so you're able to say, all right, well, here's a beer that obviously wasn't extract and it's got a big malt bill. So what are the differences and what I'm tasting?
Right. And it was, I mean, obviously completely different styles, but there were different touchstones that I could kind of say.
Of course. I mean, all beer is made of the same ingredients. Yeah. And so if you can hone in on what it is that you're not necessarily happy with in your homebrew and taste that and see the difference in a production beer.
Or in my place too, I think I just needed to have one where I needed to have an experience where it wasn't necessarily being critical in finding fault with, but it was really like, well, these are the things that maybe are right.
Yeah. There you go.
And I felt that was a really positive experience. I don't do that enough. I am much more willing to be negative about what I do. So it was really good. And it was a chance to share it with other people. And we did the same kind of thing. Yeah. Everybody had the Old Guard and then had mine. And it's just how it worked out. Because I'm like, hey, I really lubed you up with this good stuff. Now let me get this other out of my fridge. and it was nice. It was able to have a conversation and hear new people, you know, people who aren't necessarily beer people's perception and take, you know, who are not going to be critical in the same way.
Right.
And so that was kind of fun. And Raymond, you're not brewing yet. Keith, you brew for money, so that's no fun. Speaking of brewing for money, though, the Georgia beer laws, we talked about this a little bit when we talked to Brian on the Beer is Still Okay episode a couple of episodes ago, when we talked about Georgia's beer laws in comparison with Oklahoma's, but I thought it would be a good opportunity this week to maybe get a little bit more in depth with what the upcoming changes to Georgia beer laws are going to mean for citizens, residents, and for visitors to Georgia, what they're going to be able to do when they visit their local brewery. And Raymond wrote about this for Connect Savannah. It's going to be out. It would have been out online already by the time this podcast comes out. So you can go ahead and get all the the nitty gritty there, print out a copy, fold it up, put it in your wallet, take it around with you until September when this all goes into effect.
Yeah, exactly.
But Raymond, do you want to give us kind of an outline, a rundown? What are some of the high level things that people can expect when, number one, the governor signs this into the law, and then the tax code or whatever, the revenue division goes through and does what they need to do.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And then on September 1 of 2017, what will Georgia beer patrons be able to do that they can't do now?
Well, first, the governor doesn't have to sign this. He can let it sit on his desk. And there's a marker, the close of the legislative session. 40 days after that, it goes into effect. It still has to go through the revenue, but the governor doesn't have to sign it, and he may just let it sit and do its thing. But the big thing is that all the tours go away.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And I guess we should explain that. So right now in Georgia, for people who aren't here, there's this kind of system where you pay for a tour package and your beer is free. I mean, that's like you pay for the
you pay for a tour, and tours come at different prices, and for different beers. You know, the way we do it, where we have it set up where you can buy specific tours for specific prices. We don't play the game where this beer is more expensive, so we're going to charge more for the tour kind of thing. And you know, you can leave with a souvenir of different kinds. We choose to do crowlers or six packs, but it's up to basically 72 ounces you can leave with as a with what they call a souvenir, not for on-premise consumption. While you're there, you pay for your tour, and it's part of the tour. Certain tours can have alcohol consumption, but it's all revolved around, theoretically, a quote-unquote educational experience. So
so that's where we are and have been.
That's where we have been for a while, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so, Raymond, how is that changing?
So now it becomes all about direct sales. Breweries can now forego the middleman and mm-hmm. sell directly to the customer, both in the form of a bottled or a can beer. They can sell mm-hmm. up to a case a day.
What we call package sales in the biz. Sale. And that would be like a closed growler as well.
Oh, yeah. You know?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Growlers, all that good stuff. But we'll also allow for on-site, on-premise consumption, I believe is the technical term. And there's no limit to that, although right. we want everybody to be responsible and not right. do stupid stuff. But I understand that there's an actual limit to how much the breweries can sell over the course of a
yes.
year. But
I want
to
say it's 5,000 barrels or something.
3,000 barrels, okay. Which is the equivalent of 165,000 six packs.
Right.
So if you guys, how many six packs do you produce a year?
Well, I mean, at this point, we haven't hit, we've, to do 3,000 barrels just, I mean, in general is, you know, a goal in a year that we're still striving for, you know, okay. at least on our level.
And that's not on premises.
That's not on premises. Now, I would say that, you know, maybe some of the larger breweries that have big followings currently, they could possibly hit some limits there. Your Sweetwaters, your Terrapins, mm-hmm. And even some of these smaller breweries that are having you know, huge success in the immediate, like short term, like Creature Comforts. We're talking about them last week. You know, they are packing people in.
Do they have that kind of in-house?
I mean, it's just like if you get that kind of tourism that the people flocking to it. It's certainly possible, yeah. But that is a lot. I mean, that is a lot of barrels of beer to serve a pint at a time. You know, in a six pack at a time. And honestly, you know, most locals aren't going to be going to a brewery to pick up beer. It's going to be more tourism or while you're there and, you know, occasionally special release things that, you know, happen at the brewery.
Now, do you think the tour is going to go away?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I know we have talked about doing tours, but maybe doing tours on like one a night at a certain time. I know there's talk about, especially with the layout we have in our brewery, and I know all breweries are different. We don't really have a necessarily safe place to bring people. You know, I mean, the places where people would have to walk, there could be, you know, a forklift carrying a couple pallets of, you know, heavy full kegs right through that area. So I think we're a little more leery of having tours all day long. So it might be a situation where maybe just on Friday nights or Saturdays or at 6 o'clock every day that we're open, we will have a tour. And if you want to take the tour, you need to be there by that time. Otherwise, sorry, you don't really get to see the facility. I know for us, you know, I mean, the space and the facility itself is a point of pride for our brewery. I know a lot of breweries would maybe rather just not have you know, nosing in their business at all. I think from a working there standpoint, I'm glad there's not going to be people constantly coming through. That idea of being in like a fishbowl, you know, or like being on display. I know there are a lot of breweries where you go there in the middle of the day when you're on vacation, and you know they have windows where you can watch people are doing it. And at some point, I'm like, I kind of feel bad watching these people work, you know, and like they're trying to do their job, and there's people like kind of gawking at them. So, I think that every brewery is going to be different. Some will probably drop them all together, and some people might enjoy them. In Florida, I know where they've had direct sales for ages, they charge for tours, and it usually comes with a sampling of beer, and it's another revenue source. So there are plenty of options available at this point to the breweries, I'd imagine.
But really, tangible short-term benefits in this are going to be, we were talking earlier that service is going to have to probably bring more people on staff because you're going to be doing, you know, traditional bar sales, and in addition to merch and package sales and everything else that's going on. You do have the ability for additional revenue stream, and revenue stream where the brewery is going to be making significantly more off each six pack sold because we're cutting out the distributor in the situation.
Definitely. I mean, you know, and let's be clear, our distributors are extremely important to us. We have no interest in buying a truck and trying to drive it over, you know, over the space of three states right now to get, you know, beer distributed.
But it's common sense that you can move it from the back of the house to the front of the house.
Exactly. It's just, I mean, it's working in every other state in the union at this point and all over the world. So the fact that, you know, we're one of the last, you know, places to allow this to be legal is a frustration for those who work in the business, but a relief that we're finally at that point. Be nice to bring in some extra revenue to be able to sell some things. It will really, I mean, especially being in such a tourist town, the tourism, you know, we all of us at this table go in beercation all the time, and when you're at a brewery, you go, "Wow, I really like what I've had here. I'd like to take some with me to my hotel room and drink it. I want to bring some home to my friends, and while I'm at it, I think I want to buy a T-shirt." When those things aren't, when the beer isn't available to you, you kind of drink your allotment in your sample, and then you go, "All right, well, I'm out of here," you know. So it's going to help us grow. It's going to help us be able to put more fermenters in the building, get more of the tools we need to be more streamlined and produce more beer. The more beer we produce, the, you know, happier our distributors are going to be. It's a win-win for everybody in the end. So,
Raymond, that's obviously the high level, you know, the fact that the direct, is there any other part of this legislation going through that's worth mentioning, or is it really just the...
Oh, no. Another big part of it is that brew pubs are now going to be able to bottle and can and sell their beers to go as well, which I would imagine we've got a brew pub in downtown Savannah, which allows for, well, I guess they can already do that.
They can do growler sales. I'm not sure if they can sell their bottles there
not
or
themselves.
Not.
Can they
not
sell
themselves.
Cups to go?
Well, you can do.
Because it's
a
restaurant.
Obviously here in Savannah, you can get beer, you know, walk around with an open container of beer. But I know Moon River, which is whom we're talking about, they can sell growlers now, which is a fairly recent thing. I think it's the same time as some of these tour things were going on. So they were able to sell growlers, which was a huge boost for them. So if you went to a brew pub and had a nice meal and said, "This beer is great, I'd like to buy a growler of it," that's something that they can do. But they don't, you know, and they've only, and our, at least Moon River has only recently started bottling, but that's for straight
distribution.
Outside of the brewery. So that has to go through the distributor. Yeah. So being able to bottle and be able to say, "All right, we're going to bottle and half of it's going to go to the distributor. We're going to leave half here and have it be an item on the menu that's for sale," is going to be a huge boost for them. And I'm sure other brew pubs around the state.
Yeah. And yeah. So those are that's the other piece of it is the
yeah. There's upside. There's another thing in there about distilleries, but you know yeah. That's a little outside of our
yeah. That's outside of our purview. Yes. As it is. Well, I do want to stick with Raymond informing us all about things because Raymond was just in Kansas City.
That's right.
And you got to do a little bit of a new place running. How was running in Kansas City?
Well, I only got to do it once. I was kind of busy. It was a work trip. But I found a really fantastic park. It was pretty obvious just wandering around the town that exercise and running seemed to have been part of how they thought about the layout of the plan. There was always some path that you could take. Parks everywhere. But the one that was closest to my hotel actually had a rubberized sidewalk that was a mile loop. Cool. So you could go into this park and do a nice run, and it was a obviously a more than a half mile because it was loop long, and took you by some of the museums, which was good for me, and there's plenty of places to run there. It's just it was a nice place.
Got to see Klaus Oldenburg, large badminton.
Yeah, the shuttlecocks.
Shuttlecocks, yeah, there you go. I just wanted to say shuttlecock. And so you also, speaking of running, have registered for a race coming up, one we've talked about doing forever, and I'm glad one of us is finally doing it.
It's. I think this is the scariest race I've ever registered for.
What? Why?
It is. It's the Dogfish Dash.
What's, uh-huh. Well, what's so scary about it?
Because we've...
It's only a 5K,
we've,
like, geez.
No, it's not a 5K.
Oh, is it? What a...
It's Dang. It's a 5 mile.
5 mile.
It's an 8K.
Okay.
So yeah, wow. Because off-centered, it's the off-centered okay. run too.
Well, then I get it. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
I'm
that, like that 5 mile.
Easy,
I understand.
Easy. Yeah, I know.
Apparently,
I know.
Somebody didn't listen to my interview with Sam Calgioni.
Nah.
No.
But you should, folks.
But that's the thing.
Look
we've, it up. We've interviewed him twice, and I'm going to show up in my BDR T-shirt, and I feel like.
You've given him a you've given us a
given
BDR swag.
Yeah. He has one of our shirts. Somebody's going to be there and recognize. I need to do well.
It's all coming together, you guys.
It is,
this
finally.
Is the moment.
This is it.
Stay tuned.
This is where it comes together for
train,
us.
I got a speed train. I've got to like win this thing.
And when is the race? Is it in the fall?
It's in the fall. Yeah. I think it's in September, if I remember correctly.
And it always sells out fast. Did it? Has it sold out yet? Or at the time
I don't know if it sold out yet. I didn't go back, but it was, I forgot to register. Registration started at noon on a Saturday, and I remembered at like 12:15. And from what I'd heard in the past, that it sells out in the first 5 minutes. So I was like, ugh, this. But I went and I looked and I was able to register, and it worked.
Awesome. There
Excellent.
You go, kids.
Yeah.
Persevere. Speaking of races, congratulations to Craig Simpson. Craig's been checking in with us over the last couple of months as he was training for the Buck 50 race in Ohio. That was a 24-hour, 150-mile relay. He and his team did that. That is in the books. Good for him. That's great.
Congratulations.
Congratulations, man. I know that was...
Or sorry. I don't know.
When, yeah. No, he seemed pretty happy about
okay,
it.
Okay, good.
So
good.
And that was something he's been working toward for a long time, so that's great. And our pal Missy, Alan's wife, finished third place in our triathlon group.
Excellent.
And, you know, what her first triathlon of the year. So congrats, Missy. She listens to the podcast. It's always nice to give shout-outs to people who listen to the show. And if you out there in podcast land have a race that you're training for or a outcome that's recently happened, be sure to let us know. Tag us on social media at Brew Drink Run. Let us know about what races you're training for, races you've recently done, ones you like, and let us know how that's going, getting ready for it. We'll give you a little bit of encouragement while you're out there on your run and listening to us in your ear holes.
And what about reading? There's a leisure time activity that will help you learn things you'd like to know about many subjects.
Raymond's Book Corner.
Raymond's Book Corner is, of course, the part of the show where we turn to Raymond to find out about books that no one wants to read. So why not have one of the trained voice actors read one to you? Go to audibletrial.com/brewdrinkrun. You can get a free copy of this book or any of the other books they have available. But I know you're going to want the one that Raymond is pitching this week. What is your pick of the week?
Got a book by Nick Hornby.
I love Nick Hornby.
He's great. He's great. That's Fever Pitch he wrote, and he wrote High Fidelity, which was turned into a great movie.
About a boy, so
about
many books.
About a boy, yeah, a lot of good books in there. And this one was also very good. It's called Funny Girl. It's all about this girl who wanted to be a famous TV comedian and managed to get that gig on her first ever audition. And so it follows her over the next 3 years and kind of the ups and downs of her career and how she manages to go from, you know, overnight sensation and the ups and downs there, and moves into ultimately the, you know, the established comedian. And that sounds all very serious, but it was a really funny book.
Well, he kind of has a talent for that, right? Yeah. You know, coming up with situations that are on the surface not funny.
Yeah.
And finding some little laughs in humanity that we can all kind of be like, ha, 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 ha. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, Funny Girl by Nick Hornby. That's a fairly recent one from him, I guess.
I think it is. I didn't look at the
date. I haven't heard of it. So that's a great recommendation, Raymond. Thanks so much for doing that for us again this week. If you want to read or hear about Funny Girl or read it, hey, either way, go to audibletrial.com/brewdrinkrun or visit this episode's show notes on brewdrinkrun.com and click on that link to buy this book at Amazon. That would be awesome if you would do either one of those things. Thank you in advance. We'll be right back. You know, when we first started doing the show, that segue music was actually like a real thing where I would bridge two different recordings of the show together. But over the last, I don't know, 100 episodes or so, it's really been Keith running to the kitchen, grabbing a beer, running back, and getting ready for the second segment. It makes my editing life oh so much easier, so I appreciate the extra effort from these guys. I'm going to actually let Raymond introduce this beer for the grand tasting, because he picked it up.
I did. That's that very same trip to Kansas City. Happened to find it. Well, I didn't happen on it. I did a lot of research on places I should go. And the Beer Station, B-I-E-R, Beer Station, was one of the top picks. And so I chose that place. And it turns out it was a very good pub kind of place. They had some good food options. They also had a wide range of beers available on tap, and were also a bottle shop. So that was kind of a surprise. I didn't know that. So when I went in, I was able to pick up a couple of things, and this was one of them. It is Firestone Walker's 2017 vintage of Parabola. It says number 008. I don't know what that means. Is this the eighth iteration of this?
This is probably the eighth batch of this, I'm going to guess.
Okay.
If I had to.
So if you're at home right now going, deja vu, Parabola was also in episode 59 of the Brew Drink Run podcast. Yeah. So we're happy to revisit this beer.
A little more than 100 episodes
ago. Wow. So super nice to be able to drink this again. And if you want to hear our first reactions to that, go back and listen to it and see how close they are to this. I'm not going to, but you should totally do that. You can also go and read Keith's full review of this beer on the website from 2013. And there also, it shows up several times on the website, brewdrinkrun.com, okay. As cool. Keith has mentioned it in his trading blog posts, both okay. in his How to Trade and in his Beer Trading Year in Review from 2012. So lots of good Parabola content on the website. And I know you're at home right now or on the trail or wherever thinking, you guys, there's so many great beers out there to drink. Why are you drinking the same beer? Why wouldn't we drink the same beer?
It's a great beer. Actually, there is sort of an interesting situation here, is the fact that this is actually not brewed in the place that you'd expect it to be. It seems that Firestone Walker has a situation set up with Boulevard Brewing, and they are brewing some beers on the, well, I guess in the middle of the country in this case, but It's kind of interesting. I had not heard anything about them kind of almost contract brewing, if you will, over there. It sounds like one of their brewers came and supervised the whole process and whatnot. So so I don't know if there is a connection. I don't know if part of the Firestone Walker was maybe sold to the same group that owns Boulevard and made that connection. So I guess it's probably something we could look into, or maybe someone else knows. But whatever. all I know is that this was actually brewed in Kansas City. So this is so slightly different. So maybe it's just terrible now. I don't know. We'll find out.
Well, as Parabola is one of those beers from Firestone Walker that comes in the box. So there's actually a lot of information here. And it says that last year we unexpectedly exceeded our brewing capacity at
Paso Robles.
Okay, thank you.
In Espanol.
And rather than deny you our Parabola in 2017, we turned to our trusted friends for help while we worked on expanding our own brew house.
There you go. Right.
As anticipated, they did Parabola proud. May you enjoy this rare occasion. So, and they do call this a collaboration, too, in the actual text here. Mm-hmm. But okay. This was brewed and barrel-aged at Boulevard Brewing. Mm-hmm. For Firestone Walker.
All right. Excellent. Good.
I had the opportunity to visit Firestone Walker a couple of months ago. Mm-hmm. Was a beautiful brewery. We talked about a little bit on a previous podcast. Totally worth going to, exceeding capacity or not. And their brew pub was fantastic as well. If you are someone who likes things well designed and kind of very well tightly themed, that is a great brewery to seek out and actually go to and check out. And I think that what you see at the facility and at the restaurant really comes through in the packaging that they do as well, especially for some of their more special beers, which they box. I'm sure we've talked about this in previous episodes, but you know, kind of run down a little bit, Raymond, you know, when you're going to pick one of these up off the shelf, you're getting a really kind of complete experience in terms of packaging here.
Yeah. So it's a wonderful kind of just cardstock box with the lion and bear, I guess, logo from Firestone Walker on it. But it's
pretty classic, kind of that old like coat of arms.
The English, it feels very traditional. But it wraps around the box. So on the front, you just see the text that, and then the lion's on one side and the bear's on the other. So if you have three of these, and maybe there are plenty of people out there that will buy up several bottles of this, can see the entire image.
Yeah, and the bottle inside, this is, you know, when we talk about a lot of these big beers, these special beers, your mind quickly goes to 22-ounce or 750 bottles, and this is a 12-ounce bottle that's still boxed and...
Yeah, this is the first I have personally seen such effort put into a 12-ounce bottle. I'm just curious, you don't have to answer.
How much
did this cost?
I don't know.
Don't know. Okay.
I don't know.
I had
a meal and I, right, I drank exactly. about six beers while I, gotcha. I was there. And I also Dig picked up a hole. Bottle of yes. KBS at the same time.
I got you. Well, I kind of like this idea. These beers are, you know, if you want to open one of them and have a special drink and all you've got is 22-ounce bottle or 750, it becomes, oh, I don't want to open that. I don't want to open that. It's too much beer. I like this idea of having, still with the fancy presentation, but having it in a 12-ounce bottle, it makes it, you know, as long as we're not talking about the same price you'd pay for a 22-ounce bottle. I mean, if you're talking about a $5, $6, you know, bottle, including all of the fancy presentation you've gotten in something else, or even, I mean, I don't know how much these normally go for, but if, you know, if it's comparable, you know, versus what you were getting, you know, in the 22-ounce bottle, I like this idea. Even splitting it between, you know, the three of us, you know, maybe that 22-ounce bottle, especially after already having a beer, would be just a little bit too much. So it's a I think it's cool. I like the change.
And this is apparently a full line change for 2017, where Firestone Walker's proprietor's vintage series are moving to 12-ounce bottles.
Interesting.
Yeah, very, very interesting to see kind of how that goes out. So that's Parabola, that's Sticky Monkey, that's Velvet Merkin, mm-hmm. that's Helldorado, Bravo, and 20. Okay. Are the beers that are going to be available in the 12-ounce bottles. The Bravo, I see for that, also in this format, was $9.99 for a 12-ounce bottle.
Okay.
So I don't know if that's going to be across the line or if it does depend on the actual
I would say that, you know, these 22-ounce bottles were probably running anywhere from $18 to $20, you know, for these kind of special barrel-aged beers to begin with. So when you start talking about, you know, 12 versus 22 and that 10-ounce difference, I think... That makes sense. So,
I'm not going to make Raymond describe what this beer actually looks like in a glass. It's dark. It does have a little bit of carbonation you can see on the sides of the glass running up to the top. The head for me dissipated rather quickly. But
I
mean,
I was pouring this, but you know, pouring a 12-ounce bottle into three snifters is kind of hard to get enough agitation, you know, to really get a good. You know, head on that pour. So
the aroma is really mild on this, especially compared to the last one. You know, we're comparing it to something that has all these really intense smells. I'm not getting a lot on the aroma. Are you guys? I
think it's really
intense. Do you?
I'm not. Maybe not intense, but it's.
I mean, I smell the sweetness, the sugar.
Yeah, I'm getting some distinct vanilla and caramel. There's almost like a little.
Cinnamon roll.
Yeah, I mean, there's something else going on in there that I haven't, like, definitely a little bit of chocolatey note, some dark fruity flavors going on, or aromas rather. There's a lot going on. I think that I agree. My
mind is still with the
maple bacon porter
was crazy
intense. I think that without that in the mix, this would be like, you know, we would be going, oh, this is a beer I could smell for days.
Boozy. Did we mention the ABV on this one?
14.5%.
Yep. All right.
So this is actually a beer that's probably pretty smart to split even with a 12-ounce bottle. So, but yes, it's a big booze, and it does smell a little boozy. There's definitely some heat going on in the aroma.
Just go ahead and drink some of it, because that heat is there. It is full throated. This beer has some really interesting dark fruit elements, that figginess, the chocolate. Yeah,
it's a booze bomb.
But it's just I'm going to try to talk about other flavors, but man, oh man.
Well, you know, I definitely get some like coconut in this thing.
Absolutely.
On the kind of back end.
On the finish is coconut. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's interesting. I don't know if you have it pulled up, because we're kind of talking about this. I'd be curious to see what vintage we had when we did the podcast, or what review, if it was aged, how long it was aged, and that kind of thing. Because I don't remember this beer being quite this such a booze monster, even though if it was big.
Yeah, well, let's go ahead and do that, and then we'll kind of come back to what we're drinking right now.
To beer or not. To beer. It's time for Beer Review Theater.
Wait, are you going to Beer Review Theater one of our own reviews?
Can you not bury the lead with this, or just jump all over my thing? I get one thing. You're just all over it. Beer Review Theater is the time on our show where we go to the real experts about beer, the internet, and find out what someone who actually knows about beer has to say about it. This week, we're going to this website, brewdrinkrun.com.
They're on the internet.
Yeah, they're on the internet. You should totally check that out. This review was by Keith, the guy there at brewdrinkrun.com. He's written a lot of beer reviews. In fact, I think this is the time we should do playing taps. It was probably a pretty apt in memoriam for... the end of Keith's epic string of daily beer reviews on the website. Over 1,700 consecutive days writing.
It's crazy.
About a different beer every day. And April, or the last day of March, was the last day of that epic streak. Keith's not going anywhere. Obviously, he's still on the podcast. And he is writing more in-depth reviews once a week.
Yeah.
And so at the time of this podcast will be out, two of those would have been published at this point, I believe. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I got to tell you, I have I read the first one and it's great. There's a ton of information. You can really get nerdy about it. I think that if you enjoy what Keith was doing before, this is just a lot more about each individual beer. And I think I'm happy to read it, and I think it's really good. So thanks for doing those, because
no problem.
Yeah. So we will read this. Keith reviewed this on April 29th, 2013. I don't know anything about this Keith guy. There's no avatar picture here or anything, so I'm just going to guess what he talks like.
That's baloney. Scroll down. You'll find a picture.
Oh, there you are. But he's got a cup all over his face, like a little tastier cup.
Yeah.
I can't. All right, so I guess I'll talk like a person with a cup over his face.
Firestone Walker Parabola.
Oh, Yoda?
Is a Russian Imperial cool. Stout.
Kermit the Frog.
Aged in bourbon barrels for 12 months. This is the 2012 vintage, aged about one.
Am I doing a good job?
Aged about one additional year
like this guy.
In the bottle.
So this was, you'd already had it, or, you know, this was the 2012. You were reviewing it in April 2013.
Oh, so about a year. Yeah.
So about an extra year on it. We don't have that extra year on this.
Here's thanks to my friend Denver for sending me this. This is totally living up to its hype. The flavors that jumps out at me first are burnt raisins and licorice. I'm also getting some dark roasted malts. Mild bourbon, might have aged out a bit, and rich chocolate, some vanilla, and just a bit of coffee makes itself known.
All right, let's stop there. So you're really saying that, like, the booze... Oh, let me just do the next sentence.
Almost no alcohol heat or taste on this. Again, aging this would help that, which is odd for the style. This one is one fantastically delicious stout, but this is also one of those great beers that I probably won't actively try to trade for. Don't get me wrong, I would love to try the 2013 vintage, but there are many stouts that are just as good that I can find without a trade or really expensive shipping. If you are a big stout fan, do what you can to try this at least once. I will probably make that effort again someday, just not immediately.
Cheers to that.
Indeed.
It happened. Thank you. Gosh, yes. Sometimes I'm just not sure if I do a good job.
It sounded just like me.
Oh, yes. Nailed it. Hey, only one of us at this table has a theater degree. And it's not me. All right.
Well, clearly.
Clearly, if I've made anything obvious over the last 161 episodes, it is that I do not have the theater degree. Glad we're all on the same page now. Thanks for being a good sport. So that beer sounds very different than this beer. Let's just say that.
Well, I mean, the dark fruits are definitely there.
Yes.
So that's there. Booze is strong. You know what? Like, I need to take another sip because I'm not sure if I'm getting just alcohol huge bite or if I'm getting bourbon barrel. So talk amongst yourselves.
I gotta say, for me, it's alcohol in large part because of the burn. I mean, we're talking about there's vanilla, which you can go barrel, or and there's chocolate, and there's the coffee-ish roastiness to the malts. But then there's the heat.
Yeah,
I mean, and for me, it's heat. And whether or not you want to say that plays into the taste or not, I guess maybe slightly subjective, but for me, it's there.
Yeah, no, this sip, it kind of, I was kind of able to get past the heat because now the alcohol taste is coming post. But I, you know, I kind of got exactly a lot of the things that we're talking about. Now, again, it could be, you know, the fact that we just talked about it and that's what's making my brain taste it. Well, you know, I got the dark fruits, the vanilla and the chocolate kind of meld together really nicely. Mm-hmm. I feel like there's definitely a little bit of booziness going on in there, but I think I'm getting the bourbon barrel, a little bit of dry oak. But then just the end of this is just, I mean, you feel like you're literally drinking, it's like having a grain alcohol, mm-hmm. like aftertaste going. And big stouts and beers, barrel-aged beers like this, sometimes the aftertaste is almost... is such a big part of the beer. You don't, you know, some beers it's not so, you know, the beer's gone and that's it. But, you know, that lingering, you know, chocolate, bourbon, vanilla, you know, whatnot. That coconut note's starting to fade on me. Whatever I got that first time around that was so coconutty, didn't get it on the last sip.
I got
so,
it too, and it was, you know, really,
yeah, distinct and strong.
I got it as well.
But yeah, it's not but there it anymore. Absolutely fades. And I don't know if it's just because it's so delicate and that first, you know, mouthful, you're really trying to experience every piece of it, and then it starts to get overwhelmed by, you know, the stronger aspects of the beer, or your palate, it's something that doesn't, yeah, you know, keep asserting itself.
So crazy that it was so distinctly coconut, and we all got it.
Oh,
we all got
and
it.
I was on the verge of just being like, I don't, you know, because right. coconut's one of those things I don't go for. It's not here anymore, yeah. So I'm great.
So
great,
yeah, you guys. And that's interesting. I'm not sure what caused that, but. I mean, maybe it was something to do with the beer we had previously. Yeah. Maybe there's something still lingering in our taste buds from the from
so that strong. It's such a high through really note was. At the end of the sip.
It's interesting.
But now it's this is one of those beers that's such a it's appropriate we're having it at the end of the show. Yeah. It's a nightcap beer.
Certainly.
And even at 12 ounces is totally shareable.
I mean, absolutely. You know, I mean, I kind of feel like I could sort of wrap around what's going on with this as a full 12 ounce pour sure. at home.
Oh yeah.
But I you know what, and the only really plus side to doing that, I think, is to see what happens as the beer warms up and develops. We're not really going to get that experience out of, you know, a few ounces per. But no, I mean, this is, it's certainly ageable, you know. I mean, I think that sitting on one of these, I haven't really been recommending that a lot in my own personal life or generally in beer reviews and that kind of thing. But this one might really could use at least 6 months just to start to cool out, just off. To start to cool out off a little bit. But
I gotta say, I would probably recommend that if this is a beer that you have accessible to you, I would say, yeah, 6 months, take the edge off.
Yeah. Hey, if you got $20 to spend and you can get two bottles, drink one, age one, sure. You know, hold on to one.
Your mileage may
vary. You will. Yeah. As soon as you drink this, you'll probably decide, oh, I want to really age this out some, or I just want to take the edge off a little bit. Everyone's palate's a little bit different. Some people love these, the boozier and the boozier tasting, the better. So it just really depends on your tastes.
But sometimes you can, I mean, obviously you hear 14%+, and you're like, well, that you can age that, but some beers mask that a lot better than others.
Some big boozy beers mask it more, and some even if they're boozy, they have. I mean, I can't think of. I mean,
there aren't that many beers.
Well,
in this
I mean,
class
like Bourbon County is one that's you know, certainly above that, and I've never felt like, you know, but, you know, back when I was purchasing that when I could, that it needed to sit. I always thought, well, I'm going to sit on some more of these because it is such a strong beer and it has such a pedigree for aging kind of thing. But even though it was boozy, it didn't feel intrusive, you know? Yeah,
really quick side note. So like you, I'm not buying Goose Island products mm-hmm. anymore after their AB InBev buyout from mm-hmm. many years ago at this point. But that means that I'm finally getting around to, again, drinking the rest of the cellar. So I had a six-pack of the barley wine, the Bourbon County barley mm-hmm. wine. And at that point was hitting, I guess I had between 4 and 5 years, you know, okay. depending on the, it was a mixed, mm-hmm. you know, kind of beers I'd put back. And I got that beer at 5 years old. So good.
Yeah. I still have... maybe 3 or 4 of that last vintage before the AB cell. And I'm in no real rush to mm-hmm. drink them. I mean, I have a handful of beer, especially barley wines that I'll sit on. You know, I still have some Brooklyn Monster ale in the cellar, you know, just, I'm just holding on to every now I see it shining up there with its, you know,
metallic
label. And I go, oh, maybe I should. And I'm like, yeah, it's not good. Nothing bad's happening. Yeah. I'm sure. And I think I still have some Bourbon Counties from that mm-hmm. last run. And every now and then I say, you know what, I'm going to pop one open. And I do have like a handful of beers that I put aside from my aging days. So I've been trying to drink it down and go, look, beers for the now, but I've like kept like a single bottle from a bunch of these things that I was holding on to mass quantities of just to find out like what is this going to be like when it's 8-10 years old, you know, that kind of thing. Just I can't help but wonder how, you know, a KBS is going to taste like after 10 years, you know. So I'm just holding one back, you know, and we'll find out in, you know, 2023.
KBS is one that I don't know that because of the coffee. I don't know that I. But you know, it's a fun.
It's a
12-ounce bottle.
Exactly. At this point, it's already, you know, like 4 years old, and you know, we from experience know. But you know, we did a podcast. We were experimenting with different ones, and the oldest and the freshest were the two best. Yep. So maybe with more time, it'll keep getting better. Who knows? You know.
So. Oh, that's exciting. Well, you know, like we were just talking about, we both are kind of moving away from aging, but I think if I had one of these, I would hold on to it for a minute.
If I walked out the door and someone said, "Hey, I got one of these parabolas. You want one?" I go, "Thanks. That's awesome." And I would put it away.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, huh. And that street vendor. I want to move to that neighborhood.
That guy's cool. You never met Ray Dog's neighbor?
He's awesome. Ray Dog. Well, this is delicious. I'm super happy to have it again. I think that it's obvious that whatever criticisms we have here are not complaints. They are just, it's a very intense beer.
Intense is a good word. Yeah.
And I think that with the subtlety that we know is in there, just a little bit of time to coalesce would be great. But gosh, I'm always thankful to have really, really good beer. And that's what this is. If you want to know more about us and Brew Drink Run, go to brewdrinkrun.com. You can do that to read all about Parabola. We've got a previous podcast. We talked about it. We've got Keith's review, and then we've got his trading write-ups where it's also mentioned as well. You can find about that and a lot of other cool beers, including a few others from Firestone Walker. You can follow us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook at Brew Drink Run. We're on Untappd. If you want to be a part of the show, email us at team@brewdrinkrun.com. Let us know about your home brewing, your running, or your favorite place to get a beer. You can also call us at 781-76-DRINK. That's 781-763-7465. We've got Brew Drink Run t-shirts and running shirts available on our website. Click on the store link. Our theme music is provided by Morning Lights. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you at the bar or at Ray Dog's neighbor. He's got the parabola out on the street waiting for us tonight. Cheers, you guys.
Cheers.
Cheers. It's two for two on the clinks. We're doing the last two episodes. Yeah. We got our clinks down.
I think we had a couple of good clinks a week ago or two.
All right, time to turn the modulator back on Keith's voice to get rid of that. I guess I outed him.